It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 43 degrees and sunny. We are looking for increasing clouds as the day goes on with a high near 45. Southwest winds to 15 miles per hour today. Those expected to turn to the south tonight and then finally to the west this evening, could gust as high as 20 tonight. 40% chance of rain overnight, mainly between 7 p.m. and 1 a.m. Mostly cloudy skies with a low around 35 tonight. For tomorrow, we're looking for mostly sunny skies with a high near 43 and west winds to 15. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Kodiak History Museum is debuting a new exhibit about the present, not the past. Oil prices are up. And a group of six Republican senators have sent a letter asking for a vote on a bill to fund a second permanent fund dividend this year. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Democrats are hoping to reach a deal on President Biden's massive social spending bill, but several sticking points remain. NPR's Claudia Grisales reports the party's members remain far apart on revenue and other provisions for the plan.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi told her caucus in a Dear Colleague letter that Democrats are moving closer to passing their historic so-called Build Back Better plan with a potential deal on a top-line figure and the plan's priorities. But Senator Joe Manchin, whose stance on fiscal matters is well to the right of his Democratic colleagues, has put a revenue plan for the deal back into doubt. At issue is a billionaire's tax plan proposed by Finance Chairman Ron Wyden. President Biden says he wants this spending package fully paid for, but Democrats have yet to agree on how to do that. Also, Pelosi says the plan's provisions on paid family and medical leave are still under negotiation. Claudia Grisales, NPR News, the Capitol.
Authorities in Santa Fe, New Mexico, are not ruling out criminal charges in connection with last week's deadly shooting on the set of the Alec Baldwin Western Rust. Though it's too early to make a determination on charges, Sheriff Adon Mendoza said there was a level of complacency.
Obviously, I think the industry has had a record recently of being safe. I think there was some complacency on this set. And I think there are some safety issues that need to be addressed by the industry and possibly by the state of New Mexico. But I'll leave that up to the industry and the state to determine what those need to be.
Mendoza says about 600 pieces of evidence were recovered from the scene, including hundreds of rounds of ammunition. He says investigators believe they have the firearm Alec Baldwin discharged, killing cinematographer Helena Hutchins and injuring director Joel Souza in the shoulder. The Federal Communications Commission has decided to ban one of China's biggest telecommunications companies from operating in the United States. NPR's John Ruwitch reports the FCC cites national security concerns as relations between Washington and Beijing remain tense.
The FCC says the U.S. arm of state-owned China Telecom is subject to, quote, exploitation, influence, and control by the Chinese government. That control, it says, raises significant national security and law enforcement risks, and it puts the company in a position to engage in espionage and other harmful activities. China Telecom Americas has operated here for nearly two decades. Now it has 60 days to stop providing domestic, interstate, and international service in the U.S. The move is the latest step to curtail access for Chinese companies to U.S. markets and technology. China Telecom was removed from U.S. stock exchanges earlier this year, and it's on a blacklist of companies that the Pentagon says are backed by the Chinese military. John Ruwitch, NPR News.
It's NPR.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
The Kodiak History Museum is planning to debut a new exhibit later this year. But instead of exploring Kodiak's past, this exhibit focuses on Kodiak's present. KMXT's Dylan Simard brings us this story on how the museum is preserving the experience of COVID-19 for future generations.
Poems, pictures, news articles, Facebook memes, all of these and more will be featured in a December exhibit the Kodiak History Museum is putting together on COVID-19. Museum curator Lynn Walker appeared on KMXT's Talk of the Rock program recently to describe how the museum crowdsourced the exhibit from Kodiak locals.
The exhibit is using materials that we collected through the Day by Day initiative started last year, where people could send in anything kind of COVID related, whether it be photos of when they're in quarantine, memes that they saw on Facebook or any other social media, news articles, personal reflections, kind of anything that embodied what they were going through. And so we are using that collection and we're collecting new materials for the exhibit, and we're going to be showing them in either digital or print format.
Walker says the exhibit is still being formed before its planned December debut, but it will be a physical exhibit traveling to four different yet-to-be-announced locations in town before being settled later in the museum next March.
We're playing around with the idea that each site is going to have like a different theme. Maybe one week we'll focus extra heavily on COVID hobbies, so we'll show people cooking or, you know, making bread. So it's going to change. Some things will stay the same, but it's going to be different photos, different materials.
The COVID-19 pandemic has been divisive and traumatic in a physical, mental, and political sense. Walker acknowledges that politics is part of the COVID history and intends to include that in the exhibit.
I wanted to show the full experience of COVID in Kodiak and not really censor it. I didn't want to censor, apart from, you know, maybe foul language, but I didn't want to censor opinions or anything like that, because the museum is a great forum for these discussions. And I really wanted this exhibit to kind of be that for Kodiak. So I welcome any and all political stories or anything.
The exhibit will also have a digital component with material exhibited online. Videos, photos, audio clips, and text will all be featured in the exhibit. While there's plenty of material for the exhibit, there's still more collecting to do. Those interested in submitting material to the exhibit can do so by emailing curator@kodiakhistorymuseum.org. For KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
Alaska's oil prices are at the highest since 2014, amid a global energy crunch. Alaska North Slope crude has been trending up for most of 2021. On Monday, it closed at more than $86 a barrel. Larry Persily, a longtime Alaska journalist and former federal coordinator of the Alaska Natural Gas Transportation Projects, says the ramp up in Alaska oil prices is set by the global market. Worldwide, he says, oil is in short supply.
There's a little less of it out there than the world needs, so they're willing to pay more, or they have to pay more. But also the expectation that for the rest of the year, maybe early next year, supplies will be tight.
The short supply is being driven largely by COVID-19. When the pandemic first hit in 2020, demand for crude oil collapsed and OPEC scaled back production dramatically. Now in 2021, Persily says economies are bouncing back and demand has outpaced the supply.
Demand picked up quicker and sooner than the oil industry had anticipated. And the industry was caught a little flat-footed, but also they were gun-shy because they had lost so much money in 2020. They were not going to start producing too soon, flooding the market and killing prices.
Persily says it's unclear how long the ramp up in prices will continue. He says that depends on how long consumers are willing to pay higher prices and whether oil producers increase production to meet current demand. For Alaska, higher prices translate to more state revenue, but Persily says the recent bump is nowhere close to fixing the state's budget woes. Plus, he says, long-term uncertainty in the industry means there's no guarantee of increasing new investment in Alaska's oil production. A group of six Republican state senators sent a letter on Monday asking two powerful Republican senators to allow a vote on a bill to fund a second permanent fund dividend this year of roughly $1,200. The unusual letter to Senate Finance Committee co-chairs Bert Stedman and Click Bishop says, quote, "Action must be taken," close quote, on the bill, requested by Governor Mike Dunleavy. The letter was signed by Senators Shelley Hughes of Palmer, Mia Costello, and Roger Holland of Anchorage, Robert Myers of North Pole, Laura Reinbolt of Eagle River, and Mike Schauer of Wasilla. The letter said, quote, "Continued inaction opens our caucus to being viewed as a do-nothing caucus," close quote. Stedman and Bishop have opposed drawing more earnings than planned from the Alaska Permanent Fund to pay higher dividends. They say the state should follow a law that limits the annual draw from the fund's earnings. The committee, chaired by Stedman and Bishop, advanced a bill during the third special session that would have paid PFDs in the amount requested by Dunleavy in 3 years. But the bill also required $700 million in new taxes before the state would pay the higher PFDs. Without the taxes, PFDs would be roughly 1,300, according to that bill. The Senate hasn't had enough members present to hold a regular floor session since their first day of the fourth special session. The fourth special session must end by November 2nd. As COVID-19 hospitalizations continue at near record levels, prominent critics of COVID-19 vaccines and proponents of unproven treatments will gather in Alaska this weekend. No contact information was listed on the website for the event, which takes place Saturday at Change Point Church, one of the largest churches in Anchorage, that has hosted COVID vaccine and testing clinics for months. An official from Change Point said the church is not involved with the event, which was organized by an independent group that rented church facilities. Change Point referred questions to organizer David Morgan, the former head of Anchorage's health department. Morgan said he helped facilitate the event, but that he isn't an organizer. The Early Treatment Medical Summit claims to have a mission of spreading information about COVID treatments and patient rights. Most of the speakers are not infectious disease experts and are advocating for treatments that are not supported by research. One guest, Dr. Robert Malone, was involved with the development of mRNA vaccines in the 1980s. That technology is used in the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines. Malone now claims that the vaccines actually make the disease worse, something the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says is false. The two other speakers listed at the conference are proponents of hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, which have not been shown to help treat COVID. Ilona Farr, a doctor at Alaska Family Medical Care Clinic in Anchorage, says she's speaking at the event. Farr said the summit is not anti-vax, but is designed to share information about COVID treatments, vaccines, and the origins of the disease. She said that includes ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and the antibiotic Z-Pak, which she said she successfully used to treat herself and 700 patients at her practice in Anchorage. The conference costs $20 for each session. The website is soliciting donations for a group called the Alaska COVID Alliance. Another Fort Wainwright soldier has been charged with sexual abuse of a minor. According to an Alaska State Trooper dispatch, they received a report that 19-year-old Fort Wainwright resident Amir Abdelhadi was having a sexual relationship with a juvenile. A Fort Wainwright spokesperson confirms that Abdelhadi is a post-based U.S. Army soldier. Troopers say an investigation substantiated the allegations and also found that Abdelhadi was in possession of child pornography. Abdelhadi was jailed at Fairbanks Correctional Center on sexual abuse of a minor and child pornography charges. It's the second time this month that a Fort Wainwright soldier has been charged with sexual abuse of a minor. Scientists have documented an increase in the abundance of harmful algal blooms, or HABs, in the northern Bering and Chukchi Seas. These HABs carry toxins, but scientists still aren't sure what effect this will have on marine mammals. KNOM's Davis Hovey has this story.
We don't know yet if toxin levels in Arctic food webs are reaching high enough concentrations to cause health impacts in marine mammals in that region.
Don Anderson, a senior scientist with Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, or HUI, has been studying algal cysts in the Bering and Chukchi Seas for several years. He points out that not all types of algal blooms are harmful. In fact, there are thousands of them spread across the world's oceans. But in the northern Bering and Chukchi Seas, there is a growing presence of Alexandrium cysts, an algal bloom that creates harmful saxitoxin. The previously accepted explanation for how they got this far north, Anderson says, is called the Trail of Death hypothesis.
That it's being carried from the south in these relatively warm surface waters, and that it would form cysts in the Chukchi region that fall to bottom sediments where the temperatures would be too cold to support significant germination. I called that cyst seedbed a sleeping giant.
Since bottom water temperatures have been warming drastically across the northern Bering and Chukchi Seas over the last few years, cysts are now growing locally in Arctic waters. In other words, the sleeping giant has awoken.
So what you've got then is a dramatic increase in the potential for what we would say is local initiation of blooms. In other words, not this transport, but blooms that are starting, inoculated from that region, from those two Ledyard Bay and Barrow-Cyst seedbeds.
Recently, the U.S. Geological Survey concluded that the recurring seabird die-offs seen in the Bering Strait region are not related to harmful algal blooms. USGS scientists did, however, find low levels of toxins in many species of birds they sampled. As Anderson points out, since 2016, low levels of biotoxins have been documented in all different types of marine mammals, seabirds, and various fish species in the Bering Sea. Even so, Anderson says, eating various forage fish or salmon in the region still poses low risk to human health.
Based on our current understanding of these toxins in many other parts of the world, we think that mussel and blubber are not likely to accumulate saxitoxin in levels that pose a human health hazard. But these tissues have not been fully tested, but there's reasons to believe that they're not going to accumulate toxin.
While Anderson believes the health risk for Bering Strait subsistence users is quite low, he still emphasizes using caution and safe practices as usual when eating shellfish or marine mammals. He also highlights the fact that other parts of the world are living with the same conditions.
Many regions of the world face similar risks and yet are able to maintain healthy communities and ecosystems, but it's done through good management, good communication, and through understanding what the threats are.
Overall, as cysts spread and more HABs bloom, there is an increasing potential for them to impact human health and ecosystem health in northern Alaskan waters. How the marine mammals and people of the region adapt to this remains to be seen, as more research on HABs in the Chukchi Sea is ongoing. Anderson says his HUI team will be partnering with scientists on the Russian side of the strait next year to get the full scope of what other changes are happening in the Bering Sea ecosystem. Reporting in Nome, I'm Davis Havi.
The Dixon Glacier, on the other side of Kachemak Bay from Fitz Creek, is rapidly receding. That's true for glaciers around Alaska and the world. But what's special about Dixon is it sits just a few miles away from Bradley Lake, a source of hydropower that supplies the rail belt with about 10% of its energy needs. And as the glacier keeps retreating, the Alaska Energy Authority, which owns the project, says it can expand the project's capacity using the new water coming off the glacier.
Brentwood Higman is a geologist based in Seldovia, not far from the glacier.
If you're talking in terms of geologic timescales, it's definitely rapidly retreating. I mean, it's something that if you went and visited the glacier 2 years in a row, and stood right next to it, it'd be pretty obvious that it was different.
Dixon Glacier has receded enough in the last 5 years so that there's now an exposed stream on state land. It's appealing to the Alaska Energy Authority, which has been eyeing ways to expand the 120-megawatt Bradley Lake project. Bradley Lake is the largest hydroelectric facility in Alaska, and it sends powers to utilities across the rail belt. Its power is also cheaper than other sources, at 4 cents per kilowatt hour. Alaska Energy Authority Executive Director Curtis Thayer says diverting water from Dixon could bolster the project's capacity by 50%.
If Bradley can produce, now it produces 10, but if it produces 15 or 16% of renewable on the rail belt, that's huge.
The corporation recently wrapped up another expansion project, a 3-year effort to divert runoff from Battle Creek into Bradley Lake. That project grew the production capacity of the facility by 10%. Higman says, in a broad sense, energy providers can anticipate changes in the amount of water that becomes available for hydropower projects as glaciers continue to melt. And he says it could be valuable for them to anticipate how that changing landscape might affect their portfolios.
Bradley's already a critical part of our power infrastructure, and it'd be really nice to know how we might expect that to change as we're doing things like developing wind that might be balanced against Bradley.
An Alaska Energy Authority analysis from earlier this year places the Dixon project price tag at $125 million. Thayer says Alaska Energy Authority is considering a few ways to do the project.
We could do it. We could divert it into Bradley Lake, or maybe even do what we call a runner river, where we put a generator on the river that is currently outflowing and create power and ship the power off and let the water still continue to go out into Ketchmack Bay.
He says it could be up to a decade before the Alaska Energy Authority brings the Glacier Project online. By then, there's no telling how much more melted the Dixon Glacier will be. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Expos are live in Seattle and online from Sitka. More after this.
Did you know that eating wild and sustainable Alaska seafood can boost your immune system? Learn more about Alaska seafood's many proven nutritional benefits at wildalaskaseafood.com.
Pacific Marine Expo, in its 55th year, is back live in November, and it's filling up fast.
I'm just so happy to be talking about live in-person events coming back.
Bob Callahan is Expo Director.
As we get closer to the show, it's just been heating up with excitement. So 400 exhibiting companies, our expected attendance is 6,000, and right now we have 3,000, of which 20% are from Alaska. The attendance number is growing rapidly day by day. I think people are just waiting and sure that the show is going to take place, and we are 100% sure that the show will take place.
Callahan ticks off a few of Expo's full lineup of free presentations.
And the impact of offshore wind on the fishing industry, that's a hot topic. We have a session on stability takeaways from the Scandies Rose tragedy. We have a session on sustainability on the seas. And then we also have a session on the Pebble Mine, which will have a focus on permanent protections.
Winner of the Fisherman of the Year competition will take home $400, and each day's happy hour will feature tickets to the Seahawks game on Sunday.
For those thinking of attending, our health and safety measures are of the highest standard, and you're just going to be so excited to kind of get some normality back into your life with interacting with your industry colleagues.
Pacific Marine Expo is set for November 18th through 20th in Seattle. Prior to that, the annual Fall Fishermen's Expo from Sitka goes online with its interactive forums and training workshops on November 8th and 9th. The lineup includes navigation tools, pot gear updates, bycatch, climate change effects on fish stocks, carbon pricing, and programs for beginning fishermen. The Fisherman's Expo is hosted by the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association. Sign on for free and find links to both expos at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday, Swedish Friday. It is the 27th day of October, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 9:12. It will set again at 6:33. That will give us 9 hours and 20 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 45 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high for this date was 55. That was set in 1926 and 1929. A record low is 13, set in 1985. 1985 was cold. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up, or we just had a low tide here on the east side at 12:08 p.m. of 4.4 feet. Our next high tide will be at 6:17 p.m. and be 7.6 feet. Over on the west side, you have a low tide coming up at 12:33, just in a few minutes from now. That will be a 6.4 foot tide in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 6:43 p.m. of 11.4 feet. Increasing clouds this afternoon. It certainly is beautiful out there now. We do have some wind, southerly winds from 9 miles per hour at the airport right now. And we're looking for southwest winds to 15 for the rest of the day. Those winds are expected to turn to the south and then finally to the west this evening. Winds could gust as high as 20 tonight. And we're expecting mostly cloudy skies tonight with a low of 35. Sunny skies tomorrow with a high near 43, west wind to 15. Mariners, here is your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. Small craft advisory through Thursday. For today, west 25, seas to 10 feet. For tomorrow, west 20, seas to 9 feet. And for Thursday night, south 20, seas to 7 feet. They are saying Friday through Saturday, southeast 40, seas to 23 feet, starting on Friday. Over in the Shelikof on our west side, for today, southwest 20, seas to 4 feet. For tomorrow, west 20, seas to 5 feet, subsiding to 3 feet in the afternoon. For Thursday night, southeast 15, seas to 3 feet. And on Friday in the Shelikof, northeast 35, seas to 14 feet on Friday in the Shelikof. The Independent Living Center is having their virtual Halloween event via Zoom today. It's for people interested in recreation and leisure activities for those who experience disabilities. Attend today and learn what's possible and tell them what kind of activities you'd like to be a part of. It's happening between 4 and 5 p.m. Again, that's happening today. Participants are encouraged to wear a Halloween costume. Give the Independent Living Center office here a call at 907. You have to dial 907 now. 486-0491, and they will send you a link. The Humane Society of Kodiak will have its annual meeting tomorrow, October 28th. That's happening 5:30 to 7 p.m. via video conference. For more information and a link to the meeting, visit Kodiak Animal Shelter, all one word, .org. Also, the Kodiak City Council will be having their regular meeting tomorrow. That's happening at 7:30 p.m. Elected officials may be participating via audio-video conferencing. The public is encouraged to tune in right here at KMXT on 100.1 FM. The meeting will also be web-streamed, and you can find the link for that and meeting packets at the City of Kodiak website. If you have any other questions, give them a call at 486-8636. And don't forget, this Friday is KMXT's second annual Pumpkin Parade. The parade itself is happening from 5 to 7 p.m. Here's how it works. You decorate your pumpkin at home and then drop it off at KMXT on Friday during the day. We'd like to see them come in between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. Then KMXT staff will put it in the lineup, and from 5 to 7 p.m., pile in the car with your family and your snacks and drive by to see all the beautiful and scary pumpkins. The beginning of the route is on the Razanoff side. You go through the high school parking lot and then drive toward the library. Give us a call at 486-3181 if you have any questions. Visit the Aleutic Museum this Saturday. It's a special day because you can pick up your very own copy of their new publication for youth about Aleutic history. The museum will distribute 50 free signed paperback copies of Iksani's Trout Hook. Written by Alicia Drabeck and inspired by archaeological finds, this book follows two Aleutic youth at fish camp. Stop by the museum this Saturday between noon and 4 p.m. It's at 215 Mission Road. And pick up your own signed copy. One book per family, please. But again, that's between noon and 4 p.m. at the Aleutic Museum on Saturday. Registration is open for the Kodiak Hockey League. Their youth ice hockey season is open to girls and boys ages 5 to 18, and it begins soon. New players are welcome, and you can begin through the KHL Learn to Play program. Just visit Kodiak Hockey League, all one word, .org for details. The Kodiak Public Library Association has two openings on their board of directors. Join them and help them continue their mission of providing support for the Kodiak Public Library. The board meets monthly. KPLA is also looking for help constructing bases for several little libraries that they'd like to put up around town. Little libraries offer free books for everyone to encourage reading in the community. Just contact them at kpla.alaska@gmail.com. That's kpla.alaska@gmail.com. Or give them a call at 486-6498 extension 2 if you'd like to be a part of KPLA.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.